for individuals interested in the medical field. Welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast, where doctors from around the world discuss groundbreaking work in the medical industry. Because in an ever-changing world, healthcare is constant.
Welcome back to the Doc Talk, everyone. It's been a minute since my last episode, but I'm super excited to interview the guest speaker for today's episode, Dr. Sandeep Biswal. Dr. Biswal is a board-certified musculoskeletal radiologist affiliated with Stanford Medicine. He received his MD from Harvard and MIT Medical School. He pursued his internship at Columbia, followed by residency at Stanford, and finally his fellowship at UC San Diego. His focus on diagnostic radiology coaxed him to develop clinical imaging methods that would objectively pinpoint the site of pain generation using novel agents and specifically seek out molecular and cellular pain markers to highlight hypersensitive pain sensing neurons. His clinical work is nothing short of groundbreaking as it seeks to reduce unnecessary surgeries, improve outcomes, aid in the development of novel analgesics, and potentially reduce healthcare costs associated with the management of chronic pain. Thank you so, so much for meeting with us today, Dr. Biswal. I am super excited to meet with you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I'm ready when you are when it comes to the questions. We have a bunch of pre-med students asking a few questions that I've incorporated in today's interview. So I'm ready when you are.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So let's talk about, I think the most obvious thing about radiology would be imaging techniques because it's the most non-invasive. So which type of imaging techniques do you use and appreciate the most? And if I'm not mistaken, your research and your lab is developing something called the PET MRI. This sounds super exciting. Shed some light about it.
PET MRI is a relatively new technology. It's combining two different cameras into one machine. Mm-hmm. It's not something I'm not smart enough to develop myself. You really need like physicists and engineers and computer science experts to build this actual technological beast. It's quite impressive to put both cameras, if you will, into one machine. And so where I come in is I have an application for it that seems to fit really well with this type of technology. And so with the PET camera, which PET stands for positron emission tomography, you get to interrogate a specific molecule of interest. So conventionally, with the people who like suffer from cancer, for example, they all get a PET CT. And what that means is they go in for their scan and they get injected with a radiolabeled sugar. Basically, it's the same molecule as glucose, except one of the atoms has been replaced with a radioactive isotope, fluorine 18. And because you make it radioactive, that molecule now emits energies, which the camera, the PET camera, can take a picture of its location. So people suffering from cancer, unfortunately, have these tumors in them that have voracious appetites. And so they're, as you can imagine, cancer cells are reproducing like crazy. And unfortunately, they're invading their surrounding structures, so they need a lot of energy. So they'll suck up this glucose as an energy source. And that's how really smart people figured out how you can detect and stage cancer with incredible sensitivity that has, you know, surpassed that MR could do previously. So now it's the gold standard for cancer detection and diagnosis, as well as staging, and then also determining whether your therapy works for it. So what'll happen is someone has a certain cancer, they'll get the PET scan to kind of stage where they are, and then they'll get treated with chemotherapy or surgical therapy. And that patient then will undergo a repeat PET scan to see if the therapy is actually causing it to die. And that means on the PET scan, what you would see is that the tumor no longer takes up that glucose, or at least to the extent it was before. And then you can say, oh, this cancer is responsive to this therapy, meaning it's being affected by it. And so you would continue that therapy. Whereas if it didn't respond, the PET scan would look no different than it did before, perhaps, or maybe even worse. And you would know immediately to discontinue that therapy.
I see.
I know I'm not really talking about what I do, but I just want to kind of...
A lot of people
don't really understand PET. MR is a little more relatable because you've probably seen in the, you know, in the lay press, you know, athletes with certain injuries, they'll go get an MRI to look if they have a ligament tear, a meniscal tear, or herniated disc, that sort of thing. Maybe you have a relative who's had an MRI. So it's a little more palatable and understandable. So those PET MR machines are combining those two technologies, which is previously thought difficult to do. And it is still very difficult. But what I'm doing is using it for the purposes of diagnosing pain generators. And as you may know, pain is perhaps the number one disease in the world now. It surpassed the common cold around 2011 as the number one reason to go see your doctor. And so it's quite unfortunately rampant amongst humans. And it, of course, causes significant changes in your quality of life. And in fact, leads people to, you know, use opioids and things like that. And a lot of the reason why we fail in pain management is because we really haven't developed one good ways to diagnose where pain's coming from, nor have we developed good ways to treat it. And so as a radiologist, I've always been fascinated by pain. And I thought, why can't we use this type of this, what they call molecular imaging technology, looking at molecules that you can target and then see where it goes in terms of someone's pain. So in painful tissues, we know from really smart scientists that they express certain receptors or ion channels, certain proteins that we can exploit. So if you design a tracer that goes to those protein receptors or ion channels, then you may have a way of specifically targeting where the pain's coming from. And so that's what I do in terms of my research work, is to develop new ways with new tracers to identify pain generators using this technology.
That's fabulous. That's excellent work, doctor. Thank you so much for telling me about that and going so in depth too. I really appreciate it. So I think you touched on a bit of this, but what would you say are the current disadvantages of neuroimaging, like just imaging techniques at present?
Well, in general, they're getting very expensive. And the machines required to do it, like MRI and CAT scans in particular, and PET-MR, are extremely expensive. So, you know, major hospitals can only really afford them. So, which, you know, automatically means that hospitals which can't afford these machines won't be able to afford, you know, offer them to their patients. And so it's not unusual to not to, you know, people in rural areas or less developed, you know, countries don't really have access to these devices, and therefore they're probably getting, you know, inferior care, if you will. That's the unfortunate thing about, you know, technology in general. That said, ultrasound is a pretty good imaging technology, and the price of that actually has dropped over time quite a bit. So there's some technologies that can be used, perhaps, you know, out in the field, if you will, that can be also quite powerful in itself. So.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so... So what would you say, where do you see radiology going in the next 50 years with the advancement of technology?
I think there's a lot of interest in artificial intelligence and machine learning, teaching machines to do basically replace us. That's kind of what, there's some interest in that, perhaps, or trepidation, if you will. Because, you know, a lot of us would still want to work in a couple, you know, decades. But I've noticed that both artificial intelligence and machine learning approaches are still probably a decent way away from becoming standard of care. probably, you know, beyond this podcast, you know, it's, we probably could dedicate a whole podcast into talking about the advantages and disadvantages of AI.
Of course, yeah.
But I do think certain modalities will be replaced. So I think x-rays might be one of the ones to go first. MR, I think, is going to be tough to replace because MR is evolving all the time. And the way these artificial intelligence machine learning algorithms work, you need to train the machines on a kind of, I should say, like a consistent data set. But if your technology is evolving, then you have to reteach the machine. And in order to teach the machine well, you need tens of thousands, if not more, cases to teach them. And so every time you change your technology a little bit, now you have to reteach the machine with a new set of 10,000 or plus cases. So I think there's going to be some challenges to keep teaching machines, unless the machines can get intelligent like humans and kind of adapt, which probably is possible. I just haven't seen any examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you advance any techniques, there's always going to be a learning curve. And so machines kind of need to be fed a lot of those cases every single time. So I think x-rays might be one of the ones that end up being replaced by machines. And that's something I think radiologists would be very happy about, partly because they're tough to begin with, and two, the reimbursement for them is so low for the amount of time that you spend on it.
Mm-hmm.
That might be something that's really welcome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you've touched upon this in the beginning of the interview, and I just want to go more in depth about it. And that my question is just, how do you think we could improve pain management in the healthcare industry?
Well, one, we need to find, I think, in my opinion, of course, better ways to diagnose where the actual pain is coming from. And then we also have to look at the human as a whole, because pain is such a complex phenomenon. Trying to understand what's going on, not only at the local level, like where it hurts, but also the whole body. So there are many things that contribute to one's pain. So they include their own immune system. They also include a lot of what they call supratentorial or emotional aspects. So someone's fear or a prior experience with a painful episode, any medications that they might be on, you know, how they were raised, what their culture is, all kind of contribute to someone's pain experience. So I think kind of better appreciating the whole kind of, you know, all the inputs that go into someone's experience of pain, I think is important. You know, my research is really just focusing mainly on a kind of phenotypic response, you know, where molecules involved, but that's just one part of the equation. So trying to understand how complex pain is, number one, and then number two, trying to find a way to kind of understand all of those factors, I think, is one major thing we need to do. And then the other major thing is developing therapies that are tailored to each patient's experience, because each patient is so different in their pain experience. We really need to, you know, better individualize everyone's treatment. And I think maybe perhaps one of the things I'm doing will help along that path. So,
yeah, that's great. It's very interesting. And I like the idea of precision medicine and radiology too. That sounds great. Do you think there's a necessity for the development of new analgesics, especially considering the opioid epidemic in the US?
I definitely think it's something we should be doing. Just to put it out there, there's a lot of controversy on the use of opioids. If it's used well and by doctors who are trained in it, and also by patients who are heavily educated with it, it can be a very effective drug. Unfortunately, it's so effective that unfortunately, a subgroup of patients may go on to abuse it, or vice versa, doctors who don't quite understand it maybe overprescribe it, or, you know, because they're frustrated with the fact that there's so little to offer in terms of pain management right now. Mm-hmm. And opioids do a decent job of treating one's pain, and just unfortunately has this, you know, some profound side effects. So I think there needs to be somewhat of a balance there. And there are a lot of patients who are being denied opioids when it's the only thing that can treat them. And I think that's kind of cruel too. So, I think understanding opioids better and getting educated about it is one way to go. But at the same time, we should develop drugs that are non-addictive and can also treat the disease. And pain is actually a disease as opposed to just a symptom in some patients. So one of the things I think we need to be careful though about is, it's easy to pop a pill in your mouth and then take the pain away, even if it was a non-addictive analgesic. It sometimes can actually find what's causing someone's pain. And that's kind of why I'm driven by what I do. If you could actually see what's causing one's pain, maybe you can do something minimally invasive or small surgery, or deliver a drug to the right spot to help heal in that particular location. And then that would maybe, prevent the patient from being on systemic medications for a long period of time. So, our society loves just taking pills, but I think those pills all have untoward side effects, no matter what kind of disease it is. Anything you take, whether it's Advil or Tylenol or, opioids, or something, for cancer, chemotherapy, everything has side effects. Unfortunately, there isn't a drug that can just treat the disease without having side effects. And so, I'm hoping the work that I do can kind of pinpoint and, precisely tell you why you're in pain or give you a location to deliver the treatment. And so ultimately that the healing will happen, and then the patient hopefully won't be dependent on analgesics that you take by mouth. So.
Of course. Yeah. So going back onto you saying pinpointing, so like my next question is related to that actually. And so what kind of novel agents and biomarkers, et cetera, do you use to identify sensitive pain sensing nerves, essentially?
I have two clinical trials right now. One is for a novel agent. It's a tracer that looks for the sigma-1 receptor. Mm-hmm. And that receptor is upregulated at the site of pain generation. So The idea is when you inject this into your vein, it swims around, it looks for those receptors and sticks. But if you happen to have like a cluster of those receptors in one location, it'll show up as a hot spot on the PET scan. And then that PET scan is mapped onto the MR that we do at the same time. So you have both an anatomic and a functional or molecular image, if you will, that is made into one image. And so that can kind of precisely tell you where the pain's coming from. In fact, I was working on a case today where it's an individual with knee pain, and it precisely localized it to a certain part of his knee. And so the surgeon and I are going to talk about it tomorrow, and then maybe we're going to inject the patient exactly where the scan says that little spot is showing up positive. And then hopefully we'll prove that, once we inject an anesthetic and steroid there, that their pain is gone, that gives the surgeon a little more confidence whether or not to go in there and explore what was actually causing that pain. It could be like a little nerve injury or a neuroma, or it could be synovitis or something inflamed. But, that's kind of what I do on an almost daily basis. So.
I love that. That's fantastic. Congratulations, doctor. What do you presently think about NSAIDs or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs?
I think they're not a bad first line drug. Unfortunately, they have their side effects, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So whether it's putting a hole in your stomach or, you know, some of them are renal toxic. So, you know, I think in, again, anything taken in moderation or minimized can be quite effective. But if you have to rely on it and become quite dependent on it, you unfortunately will run into the undesirable side effects that they will give you if you take too high a dose. So I think I'm going to probably say that for any drug that you take, you know, including opioids, you know, you can take some in a controlled manner and do well, but if you suddenly need it all the time and have to take it regularly, then you might start running into problems. So,
yeah, that's great. And my final question, doctor, thank you so much for your time so far. What would you say is the relationship between a radiologist and a surgeon? And like, what if there's a difference in opinion that arises when determining the most accurate diagnosis? This is a question a pre-med student asked because she wants to go into radiology. So I just from personal experience, what is the relationship between or the rapport between a radiologist and a surgeon?
I'm very fortunate at Stanford to have like the nicest colleagues. They're all just super wonderful, independent of what field, whether it's anesthesia, surgery, rheumatology. One of the things I love about Stanford is the collegiality that all the physicians have and the relative humility. I mean, there's relatively slightly arrogant physicians of all subspecialties. So, you know, radiology is not free from it, although I think we're the coolest. But, you know, I think by and large, majority of the physicians, independent of what subspecialty you're in, are really nice, caring people who want to do right by their patient and help them. And so I have a really nice group of colleagues who are surgeons, either from orthopedic surgery, neurosurgery, plastic surgery, general surgery, and all of them, we all respect what we bring to the table, and we're all just trying to help these patients. And so it's always been really nice. So even if we disagree, it's always a respectful conversation. It's more like we're just trying to educate each other, you know, oh, what did you think about this? Or, oh, if I do that, it won't really help, you know, what do you think about this finding? And it's like, oh, I think that finding's not that important as much as this other finding you talked about, you know? So it's just a very mature, you know, conversation that we always had. And really the humanity of all of this is that we're just like little specks in the universe that we're just barely touching the understanding of how the human system works. And so I think as long as, you know, you remain humble and understanding that we don't know everything about the human system, you have that, what I think, you know, this humility that you need to approach medicine with, which is, you know, you're just doing the best you can with the limited information that you have and trying to understand a very complex system. And as long as you don't harm the patient, I think, you know, you can do good things, you know.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much for your time, doctor. I really appreciate it. And I absolutely love talking to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.